you doing finally now? I suppose you're off for a swift milkshake with all your friends down there.
Yeah, well, they make very nice milkshake in Dublin, as you know.
Black milkshake, oh, I know all about it.
Yeah, okay, listen, Mike, all the best.
All the best,
Jerome. The camp here in the heart of Dublin.
Enjoy your festivities. Good night to you.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks very much indeed to Jerome. Coming up, Mary Carson reports in the alternative media of fanzines. 17 minutes to 11 o'clock.
You would know it, but the Flowers of Romance are Greek, from Piraeus to be precise. However, their music, like that of hundreds of other bands, has become international thanks to an underground cassette network. Music and Elsewhere's catalogue is contained in a fanzine which lists 12,000 subscribers all over the world, and it is only one of thousands of A4 publications sold globally every day. They cover subjects as varied as music, society, politics, sex, and sport.
Fanzines have been around for years and years. I mean, they started out back in the 30s as science fiction things. Basically, fanzines are about people getting out and creating things themselves. So as long as there's been facilities to print, they've been around. It's about wanting to create rather than just consume.
I think the first I saw must have been back in the sort of the punk revolution era, about 1975. There are a few magazines started springing up then, probably the most memorable, one called Sniffing Glue, I believe. So it really did come out of that new wave era, but it built, and I think maybe the modern system started to build up in the early 80s. It was just a bit of a kickback against the mainstream getting rather stale. Don't wanna build a paradise, I'll tell you that's for you.
Heard of a music fanzine or a Doctor Who fanzine, but didn't realise what was sort of being pumped out there by all these young people everywhere.
The Organ is a bi-monthly fanzine which at 7 years old is probably one of Britain's most prolific. It's run by Marina Anthony and Sean Worrell.
But it started 7 years ago now. I couldn't tell you why it started. I get asked that all the time. I couldn't tell you. It's still going because it's like a drug. We're addicted. It's 99% about music. Current issue, we've got, interviews with Conflict, Pinhead Nation, Appleberry Crescent, Bunty Chunks, Voivod. It's a complete cross-section. Anybody who's doing anything creative, really, in terms of music, anybody who's not sticking themselves in a pigeonhole. The main problem in this country is we haven't got decent radio to get the music out, so you have to read about it. We're certainly covering a lot of bands in our fanzine and other fanzines around that don't get covered anywhere else. We've got subscribers all around the world now. Just had a call from somebody in California who wanted to send me a demo tape. We go everywhere. In terms of who reads it, I really don't know who reads it. We've got a complete cross-section there again. Because we're not stuck in any one pigeonhole of music, any one little safe area, we go everywhere. We can sell it at any gig that's going on, any time. I mean, 90% of them are sold on the streets in London.
The Organ is still put together by hand and sold by hand, as are the majority of fanzines. However, there is now one high street version of the fanzine, more an open access publication, which is selling well throughout the British Isles. Editor Beau Maggs explains zine scene's history and raison d'etre.
It came together because a group of 17-year-olds were absolutely sick of being patronised and stereotyped by the consumer mags, and they wanted one that related to them. It went out as a glossy national called Charlotte's Mag after a hero in their group. She wanted to give people an opportunity who are not privileged and, you know, get everybody to have a platform. That was her idea, and she actually very sadly died.
So when did you become involved with it?
Right from the beginning, the people came to me and to Cedric Pete because we had the time. Also, we were able to get them some sponsorship. But once you've got that money, you know, and you've done it, all the printing and all that, you then have to sell, because we jumped in at the deep end, and distribution, as you know, is the key to any successful magazine or any publication. And the distributors we were with went bust with all our money, and, you know, it's had a very, very bad history in that sense. You know, we've been very unlucky until now, at the big rate, with the people who are backing it.
Are you pleased with the way that it's gone?
Yeah, because it's giving more people an outlet. You know, more people are getting to say what they want to say and show what they want to say. And that's what it's all about. It's people getting out there, communicating, and also getting their talent shown, getting jobs, talking about all sorts of cultures, communicating. One boy recently, he said that he didn't have to commit suicide anymore because he'd found the zine. He now knew he could connect with people. He was totally alone. And, you know, teenagers are very often think they're alone, and now they're all connecting. It's about everything. It's massive, the zine, and it's incorporating every culture there is. There's no slant.
But surely a magazine which claims the ethos of a fanzine as its foundation is compromising free speech by becoming commercial. Sean Worrell and Bo Maggs.
Unfortunately, at the moment, the system, how it's happening now, through distributors, through a backer, you've got to have money to get out there. So it's commercial in the sense it's got to make money to get out there. But you can still have your independence. Because I think that in the end, the fanzines will have their own distributors, you know, massive. You know, they will be independent from the main ones. They might even have their own wholesalers.
How far can a fanzine go? That's the question. I mean, we've been doing this for 6 or 7 years now. It's now become a full-time thing. We work on it 24 hours a day. As long as they're not compromising what's being said in fanzines, what's wrong with being distributed or have wholesalers getting it out there? As long as I had freedom of speech and freedom of communication, then I'd be happy to talk to anybody, but that I would not compromise it for anybody at any time. I've had quite a few offers to go glossy, as it were, but it's sort of change your musical policy, stop writing about this, drop the political bits, do that, do the other. We wouldn't change it for anything, no.
So what's the appeal? Tim Roberts from Bristol and Natasha Morris from London graduated from street zines to zine scene just a few months ago.
I think probably the freedom of speech. You can virtually say what you want to and no one's going to criticise you for it. I mean, if I can make an example from the zine, there was a guy that wrote in saying that he wanted the north of England to be made a separate country. And although many of us might not agree with his opinion, at least he was given the chance to say it and people were given the chance to write back and give their views.
Communication. That's the main thing. It's just an open access platform for all young people, or any age people for that matter. It's a totally visual thing as well. You get brilliant artwork, cartoons, photographs, and that's what attracted me to the magazine in the first place.
Would either one of you consider starting up your own zine, and are your reasons purely for the freedom of free speech, or perhaps are you looking at the possibility of a career in writing in the future?
Well, I think I've always sort of had dreams of a career in writing, but it's not always that practical at the moment. But, I mean, writing for fanzines or for the zine is a way of getting your stuff published and getting across to people what you want to say.
I mean, I'd love to be a writer, but I also want to be a rock star. I want to be a filmmaker. You name it, I want to be it. I want to start up a couple of fanzines, but they're going to be under pseudonyms, and there's one fanzine, as I said earlier, I write for, that's under a pseudonym, most of the stuff I write for it. So it's not really an ego thing. Yeah, sure, I get a kick from reading the stuff I've written, but hopefully there's people who can relate to it.
Mick Magic runs a Music and Elsewhere tape label and associated fanzines. He, like others, feels that fanzines are now being viewed more seriously by their creators and subscribers as an alternative media for young people, particularly in the music field.
It was the first time teenagers had got off their backsides and actually created a scene for themselves. The zines came with it, followed by the independent labels, which led the modern underground to build up.
What way have you seen the British fanzine progress since the 70s?
It's quantity. I think there's so many have turned up with so many diametrically opposed opinions. I mean, really now, I think they cater for just about everybody. Apart from normal people, but they're well catered for anyway.
Why have they become so popular?
I think because zines reflect alternative views rather than the ones we've had rammed down our throats by the mainstream music press for the last umpteen years. I think they're a little scared by them, to be honest. And I should imagine with a zine coming out now, they must be quaking in their boots.
Sean Worrell agrees.
Totally. I mean, in the areas of music where we're working, I'd say the music press are only covering about, 65-70% of what's going on. They're very closed-minded. They're dictated to by market strategies, advertising campaigns, which fanzines aren't. We just go out there and cover what the hell we want to. I'd say that a lot of the music press and the established media are out of touch. The established media is very, very safe at the moment. Bottom line is there's no rules and don't let anybody tell you there is.
MC reporting on fanzines. You're listening to Across the Line. The time is 8 minutes to 11 o'clock.